roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters, and I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz on a Sunday, May 10th. What's up, Goz?
Every time you do the intro, I keep thinking in my head, when is he going to say the Mandalay Bay? I feel like maybe we're a month away from that.
You? I wish you were right. No. From what I've heard, MGM Resorts, which oversees MGM, Mandalay Bay, Luxor, New York, Bellagio, Excalibur, and a few others, they're going to open up Bellagio and New York first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the others will come. But for some reason, I think Mandalay Bay is more attached to when the stadium's done, which is end of July, and maybe even closer to football season, because I think there was going to be a lot of renovations even before COVID-19 struck. So I think it'll be one of the last hotels to come around. Now, also, Mandalay Bay is like huge convention business. And because conventions aren't happening, I could just see that hotel being kind of put off to the side for a number of reasons strategically. Not because it's not the southern crown jewel of the strip or anything like that, but just because it's more of a strategic thing. I would imagine MGM would come next, and then maybe Park MGM, and then they would work their way down to Excalibur, Luxor, and Mandalay Bay. That's just a guess. But with kind of some certainty, I've heard of Bellagio and New York being first. All right, so there you go, a little update on our home turf, which is Mandalay Bay. For those that don't know, that has been our home for 11 years, and that's why I keep saying, from our beautiful home in Las Vegas, Nevada, and not the Mandalay Bay Race and Sportsbook. We'll get back there soon. All right, let's get to it, Goz. UFC 249 took place on Saturday. We're going to discuss that, and we're also going to discuss the latest news revolving around UFC 249, so results, our sportscaster, alternative broadcast that we had, news, sounds about right. Yeah, you like that table of contents?
I like it.
All right, here we go on a Sunday night. It's MMA Junkie Radio Show. So, this past Saturday, UFC 249 took place in Jacksonville, Florida. But before that, all that went down, we left you guys on a Thursday. That was our last episode. Now, if you joined us for Sportscaster on Saturday for our alternative broadcast, thank you, as always, for following us around, you know, for everything that Goz and I are involved in. We had a blast, and thank you to Sportscaster for allowing us to do that. But between when we did that show and now, we had a fighter who became infected with COVID-19. That was Jacare Souza, who was supposed to fight Uriah Hall. When I heard that, I got scared, Goz, because even though the Florida Commission and the UFC right away said, look, this is what happened, but it's not threatening the show, I just thought, well, what if somebody else goes down? You know, then I could see a little bit more of a panic. I didn't want that to happen, obviously, but I was just thinking. And remember, when we turned the page last Monday on the spinning backlick, I told you and John, I'm 100%. I feel good. It's fight week. This event's going to happen. Everything, you know, just feels right. But when that happened, I think I went from 100 to 95%. Sure that it still would go down, but I had some doubt. Then Friday came. One fighter missed weight. Everyone else made weight. And, man, by Saturday, I was jacked, dude. I was really, really pumped up and ready to go, but still concerned for everyone that was at that hotel. It was just scary, man. It was really, really scary. Once the fight started, Goz, wow, I needed that, man. not just because it's MMA and it's our job, but I guess it was sports and normalcy and something live, you know, that's been such a huge part of my life. I really enjoyed the card.
It was a great card. I kind of expected more, though, as far as coverage from the major networks and all that. Mm-hmm. I didn't see as much as I thought it would, because I thought it was a huge deal that sports were back. It was a great card. It was very different to watch than what we're normal, what's normal to us. But
what do you mean by that? Because I don't really surf too many other channels.
Well,
they were on ESPN.
They're on ESPN, but you know, like when you have when you're at home and you're watching your local Fox affiliate or NBC every night, you know, they go over what's going on. And I didn't really see too much. Like, hey, the UFC's back. They had an event, or it was a little quiet. I don't know. I expected more. I thought there would be more out of this, but
the president popped in.
Yeah. Yeah, but the president practically runs the UFC, really, when you think about it. But it was a great card. It was fun to have it back. I'm glad that they had the extra time to prepare, because I think it really helped out. And even this situation with Jacare, it's like already they're implementing new things so that something like that doesn't happen again, because for as happy as they were with the way everything was handled, they've kind of both dropped the ball on that a little bit with Jacare, and they've already made adjustments so that things like that don't happen again, because we got a card coming up right here. I mean, we're right around the corner on another one. It's 3 cards in 9 days.
And I'm going to tip my hand a little bit, because I saw you write the script for Spinning Backlick, and one of the questions had to do with what difference did the 3 weeks make? Mm-hmm. So I'll say it real quick, and then I'll save most of my answer for tomorrow when we record. Had that happened, Jacare, 3 weeks ago, I think, like, no, let me say this. Let's just say Governor Newsom in California didn't put a halt to the show, and it was still like, we'd rather you not do it, but Disney goes ahead, the UFC goes ahead. But then that happened on Friday. I think the whole show gets shut down. Not just send Jacare home or isolate or quarantine him or what. I think the whole show goes down. Mm-hmm. That's the difference those 3 weeks
made. And it sets, well, I guess I'm tipping my hand, but and it sets everything else back.
Yeah,
as well.
You're right. Probably the following Wednesday and the following Saturday. Yeah, it would all be like, it would be a huge setback. All right, we'll save some of that for tomorrow. Let's get to the actual results here. We, like I said, it happened, folks. It really happened. I had to pinch myself throughout the broadcast. Like, are we really here? Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, we're getting to the main event. The main card. We're getting to the title fights. It was all happening in front of us. And actual news was results and news and, you know, the shifting of a division. And, I mean, all that was unfolding. It was really, really a thing of beauty. So, we're going to start right at the top. Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson. Went off. They went almost a complete 5 rounds, but at 3:39 of the 5th round, Justin Gaethje stopped Tony Ferguson via TKO. To be more exact, Herb Dean basically called the fight off. Justin Gaethje had just hit Tony Ferguson with a mean right hand that kind of... So Tony was obviously slowing down and very damaged, but when he hit him, Tony had this movement in his body where you could just tell, almost like, where am I? You know what I mean? Herb was already watching him very, very closely. And the next little sequence didn't have that type of a punch, but you could just see it coming. And it would have been really ugly looking. And I think Herb Dean did an excellent job. Regardless of what Tony says, Herb Dean did an excellent job of stopping the fight. I think we all felt like Tony needed a stoppage. If anything, he wasn't going to win the decision. Mm-hmm. And Justin was not only on his way to winning the fight, he was on his way to winning that round. So he wasn't going to win that round. And, I mean, it was a good stoppage. I was okay with the stoppage.
I thought it was a great stoppage by Herb Dean. What people don't understand is that situation, when a referee feels like a fighter's on the verge of just having too much, you have to wait for the correct sequence to happen for you to be able to do that. Because if you just jump in, if you feel like it went too far but you didn't get in there close enough, and then the next set of punches come in and it's not enough, the stoppage doesn't look as well. Like, he did it at the perfect time. Mm-hmm. I thought, and Tony Ferguson, credit to his chin, his face, I mean, he took some really hard punches from Justin Gaethje, so he didn't really seem like he was anywhere near.
I mean, yeah, he was
maybe
still
getting
standing.
Knocked out, right?
Right.
Like, he probably could have taken more punishment.
For those so that feel like helpful. The guy's got to be peeled off the canvas, then yeah, those people are. Those are some savages. Those are the people saying he stopped it too early. But I think most people in the know for sure understood what was happening. Mm-hmm. And look, we want to see Tony fight again, and we want to see him fight maybe within 6 months. I don't know. Now, that said, I didn't want to just dive into this right now. I want to continue to the card, but I guess since I brought it up, since last night we found out he's got a broken orbital bone, so I could see now at least 6 months, maybe 9 months before he comes back. Plus, what's his hurry? Justin's got to fight.
He kind of needs it.
Habib and Tony will have to have one fight before he can maybe get in that mix again. Because let's not forget, folks, he's 15-2 now in the lightweight division. It's not like, oh, he's 5-3 or he's 2-1. He's 15-2.
Yeah. But this is an odd sport, and we're in odd times. Mm-hmm. So had he not got banged up so bad, normally I would say, what are you waiting for? You know, just chill out a little bit. But in this situation, if Justin and Habib are signed to fight, I kind of stay ready a little bit in case something were to happen to Justin, and boom, you're right back into that fight that we all thought would never ever happen again.
But now Habib's moving his timetable up to he'd be ready by July, which I think is too soon for Justin, actually. So we're probably looking at September, which still might be too soon for Tony. But anyway, what'd you think of the fight itself, the way it played out?
Great fight. I didn't really expect it to be like that, though. I didn't think Tony could take some of Justin's best punches. And Justin hit him with some really good punches, and Justin's shown like his movement's gotten a little better. He mixed attacks from every angle on Tony Ferguson, and Tony didn't faze him one bit. You know, the way he was moving around, it was confusing to watch. I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to fight a guy like that. And Justin did pretty much everything right in that fight, except he did get caught at one point where it did look
at
like
the end of round two
that could have been trouble, but he got out of it. So I mean, I give Justin Gaethje an A performance for that. And
who was that guy on Tyson's Punch Out that would go back, was a bald bull, and then hit mm-hmm. you with an uppercut?
Yeah,
it was that type of a vicious uppercut. A Mike Tyson horrible. Uppercut. I mean, he floored Justin Gaethje. It was the end of the round, but I thought that's when Tony was going to take over the fight, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Gaethje found another gear. Justin Gaethje also mixed in some kicks. Tony Ferguson was not able to get a takedown, so you know, he's got a great submission game, whether he's on his back throwing elbows or maybe trying to throw up a triangle, or whether he's on top trying to get a front choke. You know, his darce is really, really potent and deadly. None of that came to play.
Yeah, somewhat
Justin Gaethje also really didn't take Tony down. It was basically a kickboxing affair. So Gaethje had that one punch power. Tony had volume. And the one punch power of Justin Gaethje came out on top.
There was a question as far as with two title fights, that's four fighters. Are they going to be able to train properly to go five rounds if they have to? Not having as many training partners available, gym time as you would want. The other title fight didn't, we'll get to that, but it didn't go that far. But this one went pretty deep, and I thought both guys looked fairly good. You know, I don't think they look that much different than they would have in any other fight. So I think it proves that you can still prepare for fights properly in this time.
I kept hearing it could be anywhere between they'd look a shell of themselves, 50% of themselves, 75% of themselves. I thought I was witnessing something close to like 80 to 90 of themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I really didn't see that much of a drop off. Amazing athletes these guys are. Last thing on Tony. Dana White said it. I don't think Tony will ever admit it. Did that extra weight cut have anything to do with Tony's performance, Goes?
I don't think so. I think what it came down to is Tony Ferguson, his defense just isn't great. Like, he's got great movement, and he counts on that a lot. But I don't know that he counts on Justin throwing from such weird... Like, Justin was onto that, so he was throwing from weird angles and kind of anticipating where Tony went. I think that's why Tony kept getting caught over and over, but I don't think so.
Tony's body lacked a little bit of the athleticism and explosiveness that I've seen in the past. But I don't want to take away anything from Justin's kicks that may have slowed him down or just some of the damage he took. He just had this like lethargic movement to him at times, not the whole time, obviously, but at times. And I didn't want to say it because I've never been in that position, obviously. As an athlete, I played other sports where I can just tell I'm off or I need something, you know. And even if it's just an orange at halftime or Gatorade during a timeout, anything, just some sort of a pick-me-up, a Snickers bar, I don't know. Tony at times just felt that way, but I couldn't really gauge it. But then when Dana White said it, I thought, then 2 times Justin Gaethje was asked about this, and Justin said, someone who's never fought should never say that's probably what happened. I thought I heard that. All right. Then someone else asked him about 5-10 minutes later, and then Justin said, I'll tell you this much. He goes, I can't answer for him. He goes, I'm not him. He goes, but I think it would have affected me.
Could.
Yeah. Anyway, Justin Gaethje is the new UFC interim lightweight champion of the world. He'll face Khabib Nurmagomedov sometime this year, I imagine, and try and unify that title. Khabib, as you all know, is the undisputed champion. Henry Cejudo defeated Dominic Cruz, second round, 4:58 into that round. Look, this one I thought was stopped early, and I think Goz is going to be on the other side. But let me explain. Cejudo was winning the fight. Cejudo clearly landed a vicious knee. Cejudo then landed a straight left, or maybe it was a right hand, sorry. I mean, those two back-to-back were really, really clean. And then Cejudo, with his left hand, landed, I think we counted 11 or 12 strikes, or threw 11 or 12 strikes. Of those 11 or 12, I thought a few went under the armpit and missed, and I thought a few went over the head and missed. That still leaves about 5 or 6 that hit. I'm not going to deny that. And I'm also not going to deny that at one point, Dominic, I guess, went flat, like flattened a little bit more, because he went from falling down to then posting to then covering up, kind of going towards the cage. But as he's kind of like trying to like maybe begin the process of getting up or just getting into a more intelligent defense, that's when he would get hit with a lethal strike. And then I remember seeing like kind of like a little collapse of Dominic's body, not a complete flattened out, because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to continue doing what I'm about to say. But about the 10th or 11th strike, I saw like an improvement of his position, just him turning his head and also just kind of like, just somebody who's posturing up a little bit. And that's when the fight was stopped. And you mentioned something when we were talking about the Tony stoppage. It's almost like if that 6th or 7th punch, Keith Peterson would have jumped in there, especially after the knee and that straight right, I probably would have been all right with it. But because Dominic showed me something, and I think that's actually what the referees are usually saying, show me something or I'm going to stop this. I was like, oh, it's almost like there was a second wave of defense or, I don't know, you know, whatever it was that Dominic basically dug for. I thought he could have let it go just a bit more. Not much more, but a bit more, because I agreed with Dominic in that he was in the process of getting up. He wasn't almost upright. I'm not saying that. But he was probably going from a turtle to at least posting a hand and maybe rising up while he's getting hit. That's the best I can describe it.
I think people are forgetting the look on Dominic's face when he took that knee. When his ass hit the floor, his eyes were glazed over. And if we could see that live, because we mentioned it, then I got to imagine the referee saw it. Mm-hmm. So that's a big strike. And then I think this is where having no fans comes to play. Now you hear every shot that's landing, mm-hmm. right? It's louder than what it normally is because there's not the roar of the fans. Mm-hmm. You're hearing every shot. You're focusing only on that. You don't have the crowd to tune out or nothing. Now remember, there's a difference between defending yourself intelligently and standing up. Standing up is not a defense. Standing up is just standing up. I mean, how many fighters have we seen say, I'm okay, and then do that weird chicken dance?
Oh, well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Right? Then. Like, I mean, there's because a lot of people that Dave Monet got knocked out standing up.
I agree.
Just standing up is not.
But there was good an improvement from where he was to where he was going when it got stomped. And I'm glad you brought that up. And I should have mentioned it. But yeah. So then when he got up, he argued, what are you doing? Kind of like to the guy. And I've seen that before. And then when they're saying that, they start to fall over. So Dominic was able to coherently kind of get up, show his disappointment, express or ask the ref why, excuse me, why he's doing it. And I didn't see him fall over or tilt or show me anything, you know, that has me going, nah, nah, come on, look at yourself. You know, you can barely stand up. None of that. And that's what made me feel a little bit strong about my argument towards it. Now, remember, goes, as I'm saying this, the next punch could have really wiped him out. But I felt like Keith Peterson was just maybe off a punch or two in the stoppage. And that's why I understand why Dominic pleads this case.
But,
you know, he wasn't winning the fight by any means. I wouldn't call it a robbery. I can easily just go on to the next week and say, hey, let's talk about Anthony Smith and Glover Teixeira. It's nothing that I would harp on. It's just that's just what I felt at the moment, and I understood what Dominic Cruz was talking about, and I felt like he has a little bit of a case.
I think what people are forgetting when they argue this is there's a difference between a bad stoppage and an early stoppage.
Yes.
Early stoppage is just kind of that referee's discretion. Some have longer leashes, some don't. I think for the majority of us, we're all able to turn the page and go, well, it wasn't, maybe it couldn't have been, maybe it could have gone a little bit longer, but it wasn't a bad stoppage.
Right.
A bad stoppage is where a mistake is made. And I don't think a mistake was made. It was just his interpretation of what was going on.
I agree.
There were, if you look at the rules, I mean, there were about 11 unanswered strikes. It's not bad.
Yeah. So then Henry Cejudo, you could see Dominic Cruz is, I mean, he didn't even want to have his wrist held, you know, at the presentation of the winner. And he kind of just breaks away from the ref. It looked like he said something to him then. Maybe he told him he stunk like cigarettes and beer. I don't know, because that's something that Dominic said later. But, you know, he shakes Henry's hand and he starts to walk out. I thought maybe Joe Rogan might want to talk to him. Just to see, and I thought that would be valuable for Dominic Cruz. It's not like he can play up to the crowd. There was no crowd, but I felt like at that point he could start laying the foundation for I got robbed. I want a top contender in my next fight because I want to get back to a title shot. You know, something like that that kind of reverberates a little bit. You know, But he started to walk out. Then he walks back in, and I'm carefully watching both guys, especially Dominic. He's not, wait, why is he walking back in? He's not going to take off his gloves, right? Maybe they're just going to talk to him. I don't know. And then as he's saying, the Henry retires. He retired, folks. You know, I was like, what the? I couldn't believe it. I thought, okay, he's being cringy. He's retiring. You know, because Conor McGregor at one point wanted to apologize to absolutely nobody. I thought that's what Henry with Cejudo was going to do. I'm going to retire from being cringy, you know, but where's Aljamain Sterling at? Or where's Baldo at? Or, you know, and it never came. And these were the emotions that were going through me. One of them was, what the fuck you doing? Like, you're at the peak of your career and you know, you're really, really cementing a legacy. You know, we're talking about you as one of the pound for pound greats in this sport. For sure, I understand this case is combat sports all time, you know, athlete or whatever. He's definitely got a case there. And at the same time, goes, I almost just want to stand up and give him a golf clap and say, hey, you know what? Aren't we the ones always bitching, saying someone stuck around too long and look at the record now and they're a shadow of what they once were and blah, blah, blah. And yet this guy's actually doing it right. And what are we doing here? I was mixed emotions.
I don't believe it. I applaud him if that's really what he wants to do, because he's accomplished quite a bit in our sport in a short amount of time. I think what it comes down to is the dude has fought quite a bit. You know, he's fought at a pretty big pace against pretty good competition, top-notch competition. I think the guy just wants a break. I really do.
He hasn't fought in a year.
And, well, I mean, from just not being himself, you know, just being able to, he's got a girl now, be with her, do things, take vacations, do whatever the hell he wants. But with everything that's going on with COVID and all that, like, who knows where people's mindsets are right now, but honestly, I think it's a negotiation ploy. I really do.
He did say, I watched the entire press conference. It's on MMA Junkie's YouTube page. If you go to youtube.com/MMA Junkie video, you don't have to sift through all of our stories, although I always recommend you read the stories because good hard work goes into those. But if you're just a video person, that's our page, youtube.com/MMA Junkie video. And he did say, add another zero.
Yeah. but anybody would do that, right?
Yeah, so he left the door open. It wasn't a complete, you will never see me again, blah, blah, blah.
Add another zero, GSP comes back. And, you know, there's a lot of things that fighters would do if you add another zero. But I honestly think his frame of mind is he just wants to get away for a while, and I think he'll come back.
I certainly hope so.
This is all too important.
He's a character that the sport needs, and I've grown to like him. All right. Francis Ngannou defeats Jairzinho. Oh, so by the way, folks, even Dana White was asked about this, and he said, look, we're going to give this – we got to get through Wednesday and the following Saturday, and then when we get back home, we'll figure out what's going to happen. He goes, maybe during that week, Henry changes his mind. He goes, but I'm not even thinking about, you know, is it vacant already and who's going to fight? I mean, I think he did say Peter Yan versus somebody, but he was trying to process it all, and who knows where he sits. Francis Ngannou versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. This was the featured bout of the night. A couple heavyweights here. Dude, this lasted 20 seconds. There's really not too much to break down. Francis just mauled him.
I don't know what to say. Jairzinho
had
here.
A nice inside leg kick, but that's about it.
It was a mauling, but I don't know. If you look at the punches that were exchanged, that little sequence was a little sloppy, I thought. And it got the job done, and that's part of his shtick, is the dude just can make things happen. He scares the crap out of people, and his pressure is so brutal that fighters just succumb to that, especially if you're not a wrestler, if there's not that threat of you shooting on him and bringing him down.
Well, he's got a boxing background. I know he's got pretty clean hands, but yeah, that sequence was a little...
But the sequence, yeah. Normally, he doesn't look like that, but the way that fight ended, it could have very easily gone the other way. The right punch at the right time could have caught him and put him down. But that's just ticky-tack. You know, he got it done, and now he's in a great position. It even a win like that, the way it looked, people talking about it, that puts even more pressure on that heavyweight situation. So we'll see how the UFC reacts. But that dude ain't seeing another fight unless it's with Stipe Miocic or Daniel
Cormier. He said
Cormier.
It himself. He goes, I might have to sit out another 9 months because that fight needs to happen. Then I need those guys to come out of it healthy. Then they take a month off, they vacation, and then they start a 2-3 month camp. He goes, realistically, he goes, I might be looking at 9 months without fighting. But we'll see. At least Dana White and the UFC is putting a little pressure on Stipe Miocic, which, by the way, when I've posted about it, half people are like, he's a first responder, leave him alone. And other people are like, the division's got to move on. It's kind of 50-50. I lean with the UFC on this one. He elected to have a second career. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If this pandemic lasts another 2 years, we can't just sit around and wait. I mean, that's just kind of the way it works. Imagine if the Korean Zombie was a champ and they go, I got to do my military duty for 3 years. Well, that's kind of your problem. You know what I mean? It sounds mean because lives are at stake here, but I'm trying to say this as fast as I can without covering all my bases. It's a 30 to 45 minute podcast. I'm just getting to the point of, I just think the UFC is telling them, look, man, all these other fighters prepared themselves. Find a way to sneak into the gym. Prepare yourself. Let's get going. Otherwise, we're going to have to do the unfortunate thing of stripping you. That said, if they do something like that, I would love for Stipe to come back and be, whenever he's ready, to get the first crack. And John Morgan made a good point. Pay him his pay-per-view points, because this is really, really unlike anything. This is the act of God that's in the contract. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I look at it this way. You can only have one job, right? You have your job, and then everything else is either a part-time job or like a side hustle. You have to figure out which one is your job, right? You can't. I understand first responder and all that, but you're going to get to a certain point. And it can be a terrible look. That's the thing for the UFC. It can be a terrible look, but you have to come to a point where you have to make some sort of decision.
But which way do you lean? It out.
I wanted to give him as much time as possible. Now I think the way things are shaping out, and now that we know we can put on fights, then I think it puts more pressure on Stipe. However, I'm being greedy in the sense that one of the reasons I want to give Stipe a little bit more time is because I don't want to see that big fight happening in front of nobody. I think that would suck. But sometimes the show must go on. Mm-hmm. And I think...
I could have sworn he told us in an interview once he's only part-time and he's just finishing out the last couple of years because he wants the benefits. Okay, I see that, you know, because I asked him, or we asked him, like, dude, you're making good money now. Mm-hmm. This is your job. You're the world champ. You're with Modelo. You know, you make pay-per-view points.
I think it's to hold on to the pension, right?
That's what it is.
I just wish... Here's what I wish with Stipe. I just wish when he says things, I wish he would say something along the lines of this. Right now, I'm a firefighter. We have a crisis going on in our country, in the world. I'm attending to that. But I realize that at some point, I'm going to get to the point where I'm going to have to make some sort of decision. I can't train full time here because it's not available to me. But at some point, I know that I'm going to have to make a decision. And whether that means I have to leave this area to train full time or whatever, I'm going to figure it out. But I know that I'm the heavyweight champion of the world, and it just can't sit like that.
He actually did have a pretty decent press release that he did. Or maybe it was just him on social media.
But heavyweights especially, I don't know why they have this thing where it just seems like they make it sound like they're making the rules, and just nobody does that. I mean, maybe Conor, but even then he was pulled off a card once. So I just wish they would leave that little out. Like, I get it, and I'm working on it. Something like, know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Like, don't you feel like a hungry guy like Francis Ngannou, if they just said Extreme Couture is closed, he would say, well, all right, well, where do I got to go to get this training camp? Because I'm going to fight for this belt. Something like that, you know?
I agree. Calvin Kattar defeated Jeremy Stephens. I thought Calvin deserved a bonus. I guess I've already tipped my hand as to where the bonuses went. We know one didn't go to Calvin Kattar. But he blasted Jeremy Stephens in the second round with some elbows and punches, and I mean, he left him a gash.
That was a horrible elbow.
Yeah, and before that, he landed some big right hands. Congratulations to Calvin Kattar. You could tell he was still pissed because Stevens was the only fighter on the card who didn't make weight. I mentioned 23 out of 24 fighters tested negative for COVID-19. Well, 23 out of 24 fighters also made weight, and Jeremy Stephens was the one that didn't. The one that was tested for COVID-19, again, was Jacare Souza. That's why we aren't going to be talking about that fight. Calvin Kattar has a big fight coming up. I don't know what it's going to be, but trust me, he's on Dana's radar, and I'm sure something big will come his way. Greg Hardy defeated Jorgen De Castro. I kept waiting for someone to flatline, and it never happened. They were swinging. It's not like they weren't. They were tiring, but then they were refueling, and they still had some pop at the end. It's just that I didn't see 30-27, honestly. I thought it was a lot closer. Maybe each round was a close 10-9, I guess, is what the judges were saying. But I didn't think for sure it was a blowout.
I didn't think so either. I thought it was a little bit closer than what the scorecard said. But that's a good win for Greg Hardy. It's a tough situation because the hardcore fan doesn't really know Jorgen De Castro too well. But he's a pretty decent, well-rounded fighter. For Greg Hardy to get that win, it's a big deal for him. And hopefully he can build off of it. But I don't know that Greg Hardy still hasn't convinced me that he's a full mixed martial artist. He just keeps proving how tough he is. That makes any sense.
Right. Yeah, he's very raw still. Anthony Pettis defeated Donald Cerrone. It was actually a good fight. And I think all along, since the fight announced, I wouldn't say I was shitting on it. I was just asking, why are we having this? But I'll tell you what, there was some moments where these guys were really, really slugging it out, especially at the end. I think this fight could have gone either way. In the end, Anthony Pettis got the win, unanimous across the board, 29-28. And I don't think either fighter's stock dropped too much. And, you know, Pettis was able to pick up a win bonus in addition to his show. So good on him. Alexei Oleinik defeated Fabricio Werdum. Split decision, 29-28 for Alexei Oleinik and a 29-28 for Fabricio Werdum. Werdum had some moments there where he just mounted. He was trying arm bars. He was trying Kimuras, and Alexei Oleinik was exhausted. But when that wasn't happening, Alexei Oleinik was teeing up for BC Werdum. Every once in a while, he'd get clinched up, and Werdum would land a vicious knee. But for the most part, man, Alexei Oleinik really, really rat-a-tat-tatted his face pretty good. So it was a tale of two fights. But I thought Werdum was going to get him at the end because he had some dominant positions.
Yeah, he's a tough cat, and you know, coming off of a layoff, it's really tough to go in there and do that. If you look at the theme of that night, like Dominic Cruz, another guy coming off a layoff. I know Dominic's a guy that doesn't believe in ring rust, but I felt like maybe there might have been a little bit on Dominic, and I felt like there was a little bit on Fabricio Werdum. I think Fabricio's looked better, but see, the problem with those guys is they're also getting older. So what? That's the question is, are they getting older, or was there a little rust? What was it? I think in both their cases, I think they got a little older in these fights.
Yeah, I agree. Carlos Esparza defeated Michelle Waterson. And if you followed this show for a while, sometimes I tend to be a little harsh on the young ladies. And in this case, I'm going to go there because I was bored. Carla has a really good wrestling game that she struggled implementing, and they pointed it out in the broadcast. She was just standing too far away. Now, when she did land them, you know, she was able to probably secure the first round. That probably won her the first round. But they almost stayed out of each other's range. It's just that Michelle is able to, even if she's out of range, use her footwork and extend her punches in a way where she can be effective. That said, Carla did land the occasional right hand that actually was successful, you know, and it worked. She just didn't do enough of it. And what was happening was, at the very end, they both put themselves in a position to be very disappointed. And you saw Michelle Waterson's face when they called it, because it was a split decision. She had this look like, what? Like, what the fuck? I thought I won, you know? Nah, you didn't win. Carla won, you know? But not by much. And I just felt like they both, they didn't either have a plan B or a plan C, or they, I don't know, but at some point, come on, man. Like, it's in front of you. Like, the clock is winding down, and whatever you're doing is not working. But when you are doing it, go back to it. Like, they kept saying, you know, when Carla landed that right, why wasn't there a follow-up to it? Even if it led to a takedown, or it's like she didn't want to walk into anything. And then from Michelle Waterson's point of view, she has to avoid the ground because Carla's the better wrestler. I want to keep it standing. Okay, that's exactly what it was. Now, where's your offense? That's what was frustrating about it. And they're both good fighters. They've proven themselves. I love the strawweights, but these two chicks disappointed me that night.
They benefited from no fans. They were two of the fighters that benefited from no fans, because I think people would have booed. I think the lights probably would have came out, and maybe that would have put pressure on them more a little bit. But there's something about Carla. Like, she's a good fighter, a really good fighter. Very well-rounded. She gets better with the striking every fight. She's just not pulling the trigger, really. I don't know if it's a lack of confidence or it's more of a safe game plan. In this case, I guess it worked out, but she's going to have that feeling that you were talking about where she's going to feel like, damn, I could have put out a little bit more and maybe won a fight.
Yeah. Every single time that we've talked to a fighter, whether it's the next day or subsequent, they'll point out those certain fights that we've all had the feeling, what happened? And they'll say, yeah, man, I had a mental block. But you got to leave them alone for a few days, because that's the part where they go on social media and it's just devastating to them. Even if they won, they're like, they're just crushed. But look, that's just what I felt at the time. I love the strawweights, and I think both ladies have proven themselves over their careers. So we'll see what happens, but all I know is that Michelle Waterson at one point was getting very close to a title shot. Not razor close. Now I just don't see it happening anymore. She's taken some losses, and that division is stacked, and that's just a wasted opportunity. Vincent Luque defeated Nico Price. That was a pretty violent fight, man.
Very
Nico violent. Price almost had him. But in the third round, Vicente Luque defeated him. TKO stoppage. Doctor stoppage, actually. Waved it off at 3:37 of the third round. Congrats to him. Bryce Mitchell, I mean, absolutely mauled Charles Rosa, who, by the way, folks, is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And when he was in some of those tough spots, he defended well. It's just he let Bryce Mitchell get to those spots too easily. He let him take him down too easily, and he let him advance his position too easily. The defense was there. It was almost like a football team goes that you kick off to him, they take a knee, they come out to the 25, and then they just boom, 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 up until fourth. Up until it's in the red zone and it's first and goal, and then you stop him. You know, that's pretty much what Charles Rosa was doing. But it didn't stop him from just at least getting the field goals and scoring some points. And, I mean, Rosa, I don't think did anything, goes.
Nothing. I mean, I think they alluded to it in the broadcast that offensively his strikes were very, very limited. It was not a good performance. I hope that guy bounces back. And
he's a nice guy. We've had him in studio. Maybe Mitchell's cool underrated cat, yeah. Or something. I don't know, but I mean, he just obliterated him.
Mm-hmm.
Almost got him in the twister, too. Ryan Spann defeated Sam Alvey. He almost didn't make it there at the end. Sam Alvey managed to hurt him, but he got the split decision win. I think that's 7 or 8 in a row for Ryan Spann. Alvey was close, but he takes the loss, man. It was a pretty good fight under this pandemic. era that we're in with no fans. And I wouldn't say it got the ball rolling, but it was a pretty exciting fight for it going to a decision.
It sort of did. Yeah, it was a close fight. It was a fun fight. I enjoyed it.
The bonuses went to Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson for fight of the night, and Justin Gaethje and Francis Ngannou for performance of the night. Look, I'm not going to take away Justin Gaethje's 50 for fight of the night. I thought, yeah, that was it. That was the fight of the night. But I thought Cater's elbow was so vicious. Not only the one that put him down, but the one that followed up. And those are two different elbows. And one was on standing and one was on the ground. That I thought, man, reward that cat. You know what I mean? I just thought it qualified. And if, plus, he had some vicious. Have you seen the email that the UFC sends to all the media? Did you get that?
The what?
There's an email that the UFC sends to all the media.
With the scorecards and stuff?
Behind the scenes. No. Mm. It's behind the scenes video. Do you get that?
Mm.
You have to have them put you on the list, but I'll forward it to you. Wait till you hear the cracking in the Cater and, well, first of all, the Gaethje and Ferguson fight, but then the Cater and Stevens fight. And especially because there's no crowd. Holy shit, dude.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It was like, if you had your eyes closed, you would have thought they were swinging baseball bats at each other because you could hear it on the flesh.
If anybody at any time was close, like, should we give it to Francis? Should we give it to Calvin? I would say the fact that Calvin, his opponent was overweight that much and he still fought and everything going on, I probably would have gave it to him. And I probably would have taken Justin's away. Justin got fight of the night. We just leave it at that. And I'd probably give it to Calvin Cater.
Yeah. And plus, Justin was probably rewarded handsomely because he took the fight on late notice for April 18th, which didn't happen. And then this. So, you know, Justin's had a stance where he only likes to take fights with full camps and he was willing to be a team player. So I'm sure he probably had already gotten a bump. But, man, I felt bad that Calvin Cater didn't get that money. What are you going to do? All right. I'm going to give you a guess here. Attendance and the gate. Take a guess what the attendance was.
It's probably somewhere between 15 and zero, but I'm going to lean more closer to zero.
Yes. Nobody was in attendance. And the gate, take a guess what
there
the
was. There was one high five I did see.
Somebody yeah, I think that it must I didn't, have been someone like a corner or maybe a UFC employee.
That somebody that I didn't recognize.
Put on a pair of glasses and did some fist bumps or high fives. But yeah, the gate was zero. The attendance was zero. At the ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena. They're going to have fights on Wednesday of this week, as well as the following Saturday. And I think they'll be done with Florida and head back west to the Apex Center. But that's still not confirmed.
You know what I would have done if I were the UFC? To be silly, but also raise money. Maybe you give it to the nurses fund or whatever. But I would have told the fans, for a certain amount of money, if you donate this amount of money, we'll make a fathead of you and we'll put you on a seat. Right. And it's just like the more you give, the closer you are to the cage. Mm-hmm. But you put your fat head in the seat and you could at least go, hey, look, that's me. Ah, and it looks like there's fans. And then you take that money and you donate it. I would have done something like
What's the latest science on if you've had it, you can't get it again? Is that 100%?
I don't think so. No.
Oh, because I would have said, hey, if you've had it, come on. Right.
Yeah. I don't think you can.
Yeah. I guess you could still be a carrier. But all right. Real quick, I know we're almost done here, and we'll have another show on Wednesday at Sportscaster. It's, you know, Junkie Radio on Sportscaster on Wednesdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So if we missed anything, we'll throw that your way. But Ferguson did go to the hospital with the broken orbital bone. We mentioned that earlier. And Cruz is still pretty pissed off at Keith Peterson. He went so far as to say he smelled like alcohol and cigarettes. I wish he wouldn't have said that, but like Ghost said, it was an early stoppage, but not a bad stoppage. Jacare and his team have all been quarantined. There's three of them. They'll keep an eye on him. I haven't heard of any other tests coming out of Jacksonville for being positive of the virus of COVID-19. And Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, at first he sent a message to he said no comment to Justin Gaethje, and then he said a real supportive comment to Justin Gaethje, and then he said a real uplifting message to Tony Ferguson. Hey, all whatever happened in the past, I just wish you the best. So that was pretty cool to see a little bit of that. And goes, it was a plethora of athletes, celebrities, entertainers, and even some media fans that were able to sneak in their tweets on the broadcast. So it seemed like a lot of people were watching, you know. So that was really, really cool to see. Patrick Mahomes, he was in there. Tom Brady was in there.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really cool to see. And, yeah, I mean, look, we're going to cover some more stuff. Dana White, he unloaded on Steven Espinoza. There's some stuff going on with some, what do you call it? Like, not contracts, but what do you call it? When you don't want to get sued?
Disclosures or
what? Something going on. Espinoza, the president of Showtime, basically said that media and staff had to.
Non-disclosure agreements.
Something like that. And so I need to learn a little bit more of that. That's something that I found this afternoon, and I was like, what's going on here? But I don't know that. I think it just had to do, basically, you can't sue us if you get COVID-19. I don't know. I mean, I think the UFC was doing the best job possible to keep everybody healthy.
We'd have to read up on it. Because, like, I mean, I think even when you go to a baseball game, exactly. On the back of your ticket, it says something like that, too.
Right.
Yeah, if you get hit with a ball
on the temple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the big stuff right there, folks. We wanted to get you an early edition of MMA Junkie Radio. So this will drop, especially to all the podcasters. We'll alert our editorial team, and hopefully they can get it out on the website a little bit early. Thank you again to everybody that caught us on Sportscaster. We're going to be doing another one of those this month for one of the fight nights. We still got to figure out which one. It might even be Wednesday. So follow us on our social medias. It's the same on Twitter and Instagram for both Goz and I. He is at the Goz. I'm at MMA Junkie George, and the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. So, we're out of here. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and to all who this may apply to, I hope you had a happy and safe Mother's Day. And shout out to our mom, who we've already called a few times, but still, I want this to live on the audio files here. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. And with that, we're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.